Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David.
Well, that was a really thrilling, exciting game, made all the better because the Oilers won in a shootout. It was such a nail biter the whole game. That was I was on the edge of my chair, and the Oilers were, of course, desperate for a win because they're in, I think, a How many team battle for the plus? Let me just hear. I just called that up there. One, two, three, four, five, six. 7 team battle. I think 7 teams are for battling for the 2 wild card spots. Mm-hmm. Though is the good news because Colorado lost.
Good, good.
So they have 50 points, and the Oilers have 49, as do the Wild. So they're right in there, Bruce. And this is you know, I called it a weird playoff race. Now it's an exciting one when the Oilers. You know, it's exciting. They're in the middle of it, and they might be able to scrape their way in. And tonight was a huge victory for this team. So, Bruce, it was it's the two good things, two bad things, and two numbers podcast. What was your good thing?
My good thing, I'm going to go with the hometown boy, Jujhar Khaira. I thought he had a strong game tonight. Played with a lot of confidence, I thought. And that showed early with a good offensive rush. And was really highlighted by an absolutely terrific shorthanded goal. I honestly didn't know he had that in him, David.
No, I don't think he did either, Bruce. He might have been as surprised as anyone in the rink. I mean, you see flashes of some skill with Khaira, which is why, Hitchcock went with the hot hand, right, in overtime, had him out there. But he does have some skill.
Yeah, well, he sure showed it on that play. He also showed some real patience. Like he took the puck and first of all, he was killing time. But I mean, one of the things he did was something you see the elite players do, which is turn, skate backwards with the puck while he surveyed the situation. And then he cut hard into a hole and beat the Vancouver player to the high slot. And then he beat Markstrom, which was no mean feat on this night, with a great shot to the top corner. But it was really sort of a leisurely play. It was almost like a soccer play. You see that sometimes where the guy kind of lollygags around with in possession and then sees his spot and goes for it and makes it count. And that was good. But I liked his game in general. You know, he had that goal. He had 3 shots, a couple of hits, a couple of block shots. The only downside was when he got caught out in overtime and he got burned by Bo Horvat, who seems to burn 1 or 2 Oilers every time we play those guys.
He's a good player.
Is he ever? But he also had a key block shot in overtime, and he had a good shot on net too that Nuge set him up for, and he was a real positive force in the game overall. Liked his game.
Whereas my good thing is it's 2 calls by the referees, and the first one was late in the first period. There was a tussle between Antoine Roussel and Matt Benning at the boards. And usually when that happens, it's they just, you know, even though Roussel was the instigator, total jerk, pressing the play, usually it seems like when that happens, it's just offsetting minors. But the referee got that right. Roussel really deserved that extra minor. Sweet to get that call. And even sweeter when McDavid scored. To punish Roussel, because I hate Antoine Roussel. He's a dirty player. All the way back to, you can
Texas
probably remember
Stars.
This. Yeah.
Texas Stars on AHL Live during
Jordan
the lockout.
I think he ran him into the boards. It was just a hideous, dirty play by Roussel. He's, you know, give him credit. He's earned millions of dollars this style of hockey. Mm-hmm. But nice to see him get punished. Is there ever a person that deserved it? He's a Canuck. He's an old school Canuck. You know, the Matt Cook
era. Alex Burrows.
Yeah, he harkens back to that. I respect the Canucks a lot, actually. That is a hard-working team with some defensemen who can actually pass the puck, something the Oilers defensemen struggle with a lot. So the other call, of course, was the they got right the video review. I think they got it right. These are always so close, but good for
– actually wasn't close because they – what they isolated on was the guy making the line change on the opposite side of the ice. Like the broadcast was focusing on the wrong thing, but it was Jake Virtanen going off on line change. It was second period, so the bench was basically right on the offensive blue line, and he slowed down to go into the gate, and he didn't get over the blue line before the puck came back in, so he was offside. And they,
so Oilers, sweet.
Oilers got it right, yeah, Jake Virtanen.
You know, at that point, Bruce, I was thinking they've got to pull Koskinen. He had been beaten twice.
Goal.
He had been beaten twice in the same way, and he's getting beaten there, that glove side. It's just so maddening how he gets beat there. And I don't know what the Oilers were doing on their penalty kill, but they were letting players walk right down that kind of right side of the ice and get a decent shot. But neither of those shots were that dangerous. He should have had both of them. And finally, after that play, you'll notice they put, I don't know if they had Russell out there before, but they put Chris Russell out there. And he made up his mind, I am not going to let them shoot on Mikko Koskinen again from this spot, and he blocked at least one really humdinger of a shot. I think he might have got two there. Mm-hmm. And but after that, Mikko Koskinen was all world. He went from like goat 1 minute to hero the next, which is mm-hmm. the nature of sports. But like seriously, I was hoping he'd get pulled if that goal had been in. I was thinking they can't allow him in net. He's losing the game for them single handedly.
It was a weird game, man. He just couldn't track the puck. Like in the first period, I thought Vancouver had about five golden chances, and they just couldn't pull the trigger, or they missed the net, or they flubbed the play somehow.
And he looked shaky.
Seemed lost, and like they had like real good looks at the net. They got the one goal on him short side, from bad angle distance, and it was a screen. But I mean, he's 6'7". The screens shouldn't bother him that much. And then the second one by Hutton, the one that got called back, was the same, only further out and even worse. Like he left like this 2 foot hole in the short side of the net. Yeah. And I was saying to my wife, I said, he can't start the third period. And then, this sort of miracle from above, and they got this video review, and that one gets wiped off the board. And you know what, from that moment till the end of the game, Koskinen was tremendous. It was like he found the puck. He spent the whole first two periods looking for the puck, but once he found it, you couldn't be beaten. And he was good in the third period, great in the overtime, great in the shootout. And they never got another one by him. Five out of five guys couldn't find a hole in the shootout. And there was no holes to hit. They were hitting the boards because the goalie had the whole net covered.
So what is your bad thing?
Well, That was kind of it, but I think I got to go with Caleb Jones' giveaway on the 2-2 goal. And the reason I'm going to single him out this time is he made that exact same mistake about 2 weeks ago against Winnipeg in the game, yep. New Year's Eve game here. And the Oilers had just tied that game up 2-2 in the second period, and Jones got the puck behind his own goal line to the right of his own net. He tried to make a pass to a guy, a teammate, basically passed it right up his own slot. That time Blake Wheeler pounced on it, and he ripped basically the identical shot into the top corner. And that was a critical goal in that game. And I thought, well, rookie mistake, you got to learn from those mistakes. And that's where I'm going to give him a little harder time tonight, because clearly he didn't learn from that mistake, because he just made the same mistake. So he's got to rein that in. The instincts of moving the puck are all well and good, but moving it into your own slot, especially when your teammate's not expecting the pass or he's standing around in the wrong position like Jesse Puljujärvi was in this instance, then trouble ensues.
I don't blame Puljujärvi there, Bruce. I mean, the puck gets thrown out. What's Puljujärvi supposed to do? I mean, he gets thrown out suddenly.
Yeah. Anyway, he's the secondary to me, but mainly that's just a poor decision and execution by Caleb Jones, who had a rough night.
Yeah, Larson there also made a bad play. Like Larson has a chance, and he just kind of fires it into the scrum and hits people. He could have reversed the puck there,
maybe
earlier. So both those guys, Larson, that's all night long, Bruce. I was watching Oilers defensemen rim the puck. I'm getting so tired of seeing Oilers defensemen rim the puck and not hit players on the sticks. It's just killing this team. They just need to get Klefbom back so dearly, because then they'll have at least two guys who can hit someone on the stick, him and Jones. And Jones is he had the probably the worst night of his professional career. I had him as making major mistakes on four grade A chances. Wow. And not a good night at all. That's going to happen when you're playing top minutes now, and then you're going to have that kind of game.
And then
but at least he can make a pass, like more than Manning and Benning. Like they're just rimming the puck, and Larson too much, Russell too much, Nurse too much. Like the Oilers need more. It's just top of their list. And I know that Craig Button now says Evan Bouchard isn't nearly ready for the NHL. Not close, but
he better be.
He better be. Yeah, we need him, Klefbom, and Jones. One guy at least on each pairing next year. Yeah, if he could come back strong, that'd be a dream.
Anyway, Jones, in addition to the pain from that goal, he was left in a pretty bad way when he was really creamed by huge Eric Gudbranson late in the game. And he went down the tunnel, and I noticed in overtime, which normally he's been playing in the overtimes a little bit, but they had Nurse, Russell, and Larson out there in overtime. Larson, I'm not sure he's ever played in overtime for the Oilers before, but the unavailability of Jones left him very little choice.
He was apparently on the bench, I think I heard, that Jones was on the bench. He did leave, but I thought I heard that, but maybe I'm wrong. This would be a disaster for the Oilers, Bruce, if Jones is gone. Like, seriously, they have no one else. Mm-hmm. They can slot in there. They were getting shredded before he started to play well for them. And I mean, he's done an okay job filling in for Klefbom. So filling that hole. I mean, at least Russell's here. Russell, Nurse, and Larson. I don't know who they're going to get if Jones has to miss a game or two. That would be extremely bad news. So my bad thing. So Bruce, as soon as Jones goes out. Manning hadn't had a terrible game up until then. But they put him out there with Larson. The two veterans, I guess they're thinking, let's get the veteran Manning out there with Larson to kill off the game. And what happens is they lob the puck down the ice. Larson bites on it. Manning's back on the guy, and he gets walked. And they get it like probably Vancouver's best scoring chance of the game with 19 seconds left.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, Manning. He's got to make that play, and Larson's got
some kind of play. Like the guy, I mean, Pertinen, like I think he got a bit of a favorable bounce. Like the lob had a bit of backspin on it, so he got the puck. But when he got it, Manning was in front of it, and he just walked right around him.
Get a piece of his body, man.
You got to get a piece of the guy. Holy moly, brutal.
Yeah, that
was. Anyway, if that had gone in the net, I mean, we might have seen. Peter Chiarelli, he's taken enough grief in this town, but he would have took a lot more if Brandon Manning had cost him a game of 20 seconds.
Can you imagine?
To the Canucks.
Could you imagine our mood? We would have been in such a foul mood ourselves.
Yes.
Because that's the funny thing about hockey. It's like it's ecstasy and agony all in back and forth. And that game had plenty of it. That was one of the most exciting games of the year, I thought. I really enjoyed it, especially as it went along and especially as Koskinen settled down. Yeah, and it became a goalie battle.
Did it ever? Markstrom was really good, and Koskinen was really good. And the shootout, it was a matter of, Jesus, is anybody ever going to score on these guys?
I was hoping they'd put out Yamamoto, who I thought looked good and confident with the puck all game, because I thought
he'd be like, nice, I think.
When they put Kara out, I just said, there's no way. And, of course, when they put Chiasson out, I would say, no, there's no way he'll score. But, of course, he did. Bruce, I'll go with my number here, because I'm getting into some of these – Chiasson, Yamamoto. It is the Oilers had 15 grade A chances.
Excellent.
And Vancouver had 14 grade A chances, speaking to the closeness of the game. Mm-hmm. The Oilers, Bruce,
that's a big number, though, for both teams. Like, defensive struggle.
Oh, no, not at all. And a lot of that happened in overtime, right? There was four for the Oilers and two for Vancouver in overtime. But, Bruce, usually when the Oilers get scoring chances, it's all two or three guys, 97, 29, and 39 often are getting a lot of them. Tonight, Bruce, 13 different Edmonton Oilers had grade A chances, 13 different players. And the only guys that had, had scoring chances, because McDavid's chance, his goal I counted as a B chance because it was kind of outside the zone, although maybe we'll revisit that. You think it's an A chance?
An A in my book. So it's
probably
going the screen. He shot right through Tanev's legs.
All right, I'll probably
take the marks on if that was a B chance.
Well, it was from fairly far out. I mean,
he never saw. He just heard it going by and hitting the net.
All right, I've changed it. I've changed it as we're speaking. Yeah. But anyway, so 16 grade A chances for the Oilers.
All right. Even better.
And 14 for the Canucks. And I'm changing it in case anyone wonders. Bruce has the veto on this. I do the initial scoring chances, and then Bruce reviews it to see if I got it wrong. And he essentially has a veto unless I can point to some obvious error in his thinking, which isn't that often. So 13 Edmonton Oilers, Bruce, had grade A scoring chance shots.
Were the shooters?
Shooters.
13 different shooters.
Wow. And the only people that had two, the only people that I had two by my count, and maybe I've screwed it up a little bit, but anyway, Kara and Russell both had two each. Mm-hmm. So McDavid and Draisaitl did not. They did not dominate this game.
Didn't dominate, but yeah.
Maybe Draisaitl
had the breakaway in overtime, and I thought one of his chances on the power play in the first period was a mighty good
one. I didn't count that one. I thought it looked better than it was because Markstrom kind of muffed it, that one. I didn't count that as a grade 8 chance.
Okay.
Anyway, 13 players. That kind of depth of attacking has been a very, very extremely, almost never seen, unbelievably rare thing for the Edmonton Oilers this year. Finally, they had some lines that were making some plays. You know, Kara, the Colby Cave, which is such a great hockey name, and Puljujärvi had it going on a few times. The Nugent Hopkins, Lucic, Yamamoto line, I actually thought that Lucic looked as good as he's looked all year in terms of how he's moving and making plays. I mean, he's not a very good player anymore, but he did have a pretty good game. And Yamamoto, I thought, looked good. Reeder had a breakaway. I just really liked that kind of scoring depth or attacking depth, at least. And the goals came from Kara got a goal and McDavid. And who got the third one here? Or no, there was just the two.
Yeah, just the two.
And then the third in over shootout. What's your number?
My number is 30-22, and that was the shots on net in this game for the Oilers. Hallelujah.
Woo. Yeah.
The Oilers actually outshot the other guys for the second time since Oscar Klefbom got hurt about 5 weeks ago. And they especially the first period, which they dominated to the tune of 12-5. Mind you, as I mentioned earlier, Vancouver had some good looks that didn't turn into shots. The Oilers at least broke even, if not carried the play slightly. Your scoring chances show the same thing. And, you give yourself a chance to win when you're not constantly on the defensive. And
There were some pretty sad periods where Vancouver was really cycling the Oilers. And this is almost always due to the Oilers' inability of the defenseman to move the puck with any kind of adroitness. So it's hard to watch at times. But this is the Edmonton Oilers, especially with Klefbom gone. You know, with Klefbom out there, he's playing how many minutes does he play even strength in game? 20?
Oh, yeah, about 20. And then he plays heavy minutes on both special teams.
So they have someone there who could at least make a pass, right? And he and Larson, he makes Larson a little better.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, but that third pairing and you know, Russell and Nurse, they're not great passers of the puck either. Nurse makes so many questionable decisions, including that terrible penalty that he took. It almost cost them the game, but that's sneaking in an extra bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Also, two extra good things, and they're both similar. They're both goal line saves, one by Chris Russell, one by Darnell Nurse, and they were both lifesavers. The puck was going in the net both times.
Wasn't that sweet?
Mm-hmm.
There was lots to be happy about in that game. The Oilers, I think, got the bounces in that one.
A little bit, yep. And they got the 2 points, or two of the 3 points, or however the hell you parse it in this stupid point system. Ideally, you get two and the other guys get none, but the main thing is you get the two, and they managed to pull it off.
Okay, I'll just do a real quick review of the race, Bruce, and we'll end it there, okay? Colorado, 47 games, 50 points. Minnesota, 46 games, 49 points. Edmonton, 47 points, 49 points. Vancouver, 48 games, 48 points. Anaheim, 47 games and 47 points. Anaheim's goal differential is minus 30.
Yeah.
Now, the Oilers have a minus 12 goal differential, but I don't know how many empty net goals they've let in. It's got to be
about 12.
Six or seven or eight or nine.
They're minus eight or nine, yeah. They've got three or four, and they've given up 12.
Yeah, so I think in terms of goals, I don't know, maybe Minnesota has let in a lot of empty net goals in Vancouver. Maybe they all have. I don't know. But I think Edmonton is probably, it seems like a lot. Anyway, Bruce, let's leave it there for tonight. I know you got work to do, so doing the game grade. So thanks for talking tonight.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.